You're listening to Live from Lord North Street, a podcast from the Institute of Economic Affairs. I'm Kate Andrews, news editor at the IEA. Today I'm speaking to the IEA's head of health and welfare, Dr. Christian Niemitz, about the UK's National Treasure, also known as the National Health Service. In the wake of yet another winter crisis, Christian explains how other countries manage to avoid system shutdowns every year, mainly through the use of market mechanisms that lead to better efficiencies and, in turn, better patient outcomes. Christian also addresses the issue of funding, noting that more cash can lead to a more generous healthcare system, but it is not obvious that it would solve the bread and butter issues facing the NHS, like A&E waiting times or cancer survival rates. If you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes channel, IEA Conversations. The National Health Service in the United Kingdom is a mess right now. They canceled 50,000 operations in the month of January alone. The NHS is in a perpetual state of crisis. It's now being called the winter crisis, but we know this happens every year. Does this happen in other countries?
I can't speak for the whole of Europe, but I can certainly say that I had never heard the term winter crisis before I moved here about 10 years ago. When I heard it for the first time, I had no idea what it meant. I saw absolutely no connection between the season of the year and the state of the healthcare system. It's something that is quite not unique, but quite specific to this system here. So the other day I was looking for stories about whether there was anything on winter crisis in the German press or the Swiss press or the Austrian press. It turned out most of the stories that I found were about the winter crisis here in Britain.
So, being reported over there.
Yes, it's so bad now that it's being picked up elsewhere, which is quite unusual. You wouldn't normally write about the healthcare systems of other countries. No, otherwise they were all just talking about the sort of general problems that all healthcare systems in developed countries are facing, meaning an aging population, rising cost pressures over time. So more like an ongoing crisis rather than an acute crisis, but it was nothing that was happening now. One system that seems to have very similar problems, winter crises on a regular basis as well, is the Irish system. But that, of course, is a relative of the NHS. That is one of the systems which is most similar, again, to the NHS. So there seems to be something about that type of system, about national health services.
And let's be more specific, because Ireland is essentially the only country that has adopted the NHS basically like for like. Contrary to popular belief, most of the developed world has adopted universal access to healthcare, but they have not adopted a national healthcare service.
Yes, most systems are mixed systems, with some public, some private provisions. There's essentially two alternatives to, or three alternatives to having a national health service. One would be the public insurer model, where you have most healthcare being funded by the government but not provided by the government. You would have some government insurer that commissions and contracts healthcare services. That would be the system that you get in places like France and Australia. The other alternative is the social health insurance system. That is a system where you have competing insurers and competing healthcare providers, where both funding and provision are mostly private, but where the government also makes sure that everybody is covered. So if you can't afford your insurance premium, then the government will pay it for you. And the government would also make sure that health insurers cannot discriminate on the basis of health status. So if you have chronic conditions, your premium isn't going to go up, or the insurer could not reject you. They couldn't say, you're not profitable to insure, we don't want you. They have to accept everybody. That would be the social insurance model, where it's otherwise market-based, but with the government ensuring universality. And then some places have systems of regional and local health services. That would be the Scandinavian model, where it is mostly government-funded and provided, but on a more local basis, and you get competition between jurisdictions.
So I had never heard of the phrase winter crisis either until I came to the UK. Granted, I'm from America, and that's its own kettle of fish. It's not a very efficient system. But again, this phrase was new to me. And I saw as well over in the States over the past few weeks, the NHS winter crisis has been reported on. The New York Times had a piece on it. It was reporting on the crisis and how bad it was and the operations canceled, but it more or less said, this is because the government is underfunding the NHS. And that's what we hear all the time, isn't it? That this is simply an issue of funding. Christian, is that the solution? Do we just need to put more cash into the system?
It seems to be worse this year than in most of the previous years. You could say that that incremental crisis, that extra crisis, that bit that makes it worse, that has to do with the slowdown in spending increases. Used to be the case that spending would go up by 4, 5, 6, 7% every year in most of the 2000s. That has slowed down to something like 1% in real terms or even less. While demand keeps growing, you could say that that creates additional pressure. But there has been a winter crisis of some sort pretty much all the time, even in years in which spending was increased quite dramatically from year to year. So this is something deeper, something more systemic. And there is good reason to believe that this is about more than the things that money can solve. It's simply that we spend about 10% of GDP on healthcare, mostly NHS plus a little bit of private provision. That's a pretty normal figure. Now, there are systems that are more generously funded, but it's not totally out of kilter with the norm in the developed world. And generally speaking, the systems that are more generously funded are more generous systems. They can afford more stuff that is not necessary for survival, not a matter of life or death, but that is nice to have. So if you talk to Western European expats who live in Britain, if you ask them, what do you make of the NHS? How does it compare to healthcare in your country of origin? Most of them will talk about how the system that they grew up with is more generous, how they used to get some treatment in their former home country that they can't get here, or only with much longer waiting times and higher hurdles. That is a point where I would say, yes, that's probably due to differences in funding. This is this sort of stuff that generously funded health systems can afford, and a system like ours, not necessarily. That's where money makes a difference. But here, we're not talking about how generous a system is. We're not talking about generosity. We're talking about how a system deals with its bread and butter issues, with the core functions. So it's a bit like in personal spending. If you secured an extra £1,000 from somewhere, you would probably spend them on dining out or on a nice holiday, but it would not buy you better bread or better milk.
Right.
Because those are the basics, and you've already got the basics covered. And if you don't, then you're probably doing something wrong.
So when people are frustrated that certain cancer treatments, for example, aren't available on the NHS, that could be down to funding. But when we talk about GP appointments, A&E waiting times, cancer survival rates in their most basic form, this is where the NHS does seem to be really falling off a cliff, where other healthcare services are managing just fine.
Yes, it's on the life or death issues that the NHS is lagging behind. That's why I think it's a fair comparison to compare the NHS to more generously funded systems, because even though they have more money overall, they're not necessarily spending them on those bread and butter issues. So if you look at survival rates for different conditions, you really are comparing like with like. It shouldn't matter too much how lavishly a system is funded. And here specifically, we're talking about a crisis in the hospital sector. The hospital sector on its own is not underfunded, at least not by international standards. We spend something like 4% of GDP on hospital care. That's a pretty normal figure. That's about the same as the figure in the Netherlands, in Switzerland, in most of Western Europe. That is pretty much the norm.
Wow, that's amazing. Because everyone always speaks about particularly our hospital treatment as if it's deeply underfunded. Throughout this winter crisis this year so far, the main focus has actually been on A&E.
Yes, but the trouble here is that when you compare healthcare spending figures, we're talking about a massive aggregate. Total healthcare spending, well, it's a tenth of our entire economy. So that comprises a lot of very different things. That is GP care, that is lots of specialists, hospitals, pharmaceuticals, medical technology, medical devices. That's a whole range of things. And it is the case that a lot of systems spend more in some of those other categories on medical goods and services. Their generously funded systems like the French and the German system spend more. But specifically on the hospital sector, they don't. They all spend around 4% of GDP, some of them less.
So it explains why their percentage of GDP overall is higher, but it is no excuse for the NHS to be performing so poorly, especially when it comes to things like hospitals and A&E. Christian, what you're saying for years to me has sounded so sensible. We're not talking about overthrowing a system and so that poor people can't get access. We're talking about improvements that Germany and Switzerland and the Netherlands and Australia have taken up. These are not scary systems. These are not countries where we would be fearful to be treated. So why is it that these arguments won't resonate with the general public?
Actually, those comparisons are the only kind of argument with which I have had some success during public speaking engagements. If you only talk about or predominantly talk about how bad the NHS is, you're not getting anywhere. People just become more defensive about it. It's much more when you talk about how other systems are better, then people might start to listen, especially when you use these non-scary examples and in some cases examples that are often held up, especially by the left, as role models.
Particularly the Scandinavian countries as being more left-wing and redistributing more money.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the needle has moved at all when it comes to healthcare, especially in the past few years? Do you think there's more of an appetite for these arguments? Do you think they're getting more airtime? Do you think that the conversation is changing in a positive direction?
Very slowly, but at least suggesting to look at other systems is no longer, I think, quite the taboo that it may once have been. It would have been a couple of years ago that if you said, oh, look across the channel, the Swiss system isn't so bad, the Dutch system isn't so bad, that an opponent would immediately say, oh, come on, shut up. What do you really want is the American system. That has become a bit harder to do.
Especially when you come out and say, I am not advocating for the American system. It still uses a scaremongering tactic, though, isn't it? As if the only two systems in the world are the NHS and the USA.
Yes, it's just an easy target because it has those well-known flaws. That's why it's an easy way to close down a debate quickly.
What would your ideal system be if you could pick up a system from around the world or maybe do a combination of systems and put them here in the UK? What do you think you'd choose?
Yes, it would be a combination. My ideal system would be a mashup of a number of systems that already exist and that have already been tried and tested, in some cases over decades or more than 100 years. And I would put the most liberal features of a number of them together. So that would be the different social insurance systems. They are a family of systems. They have a number of things in common. They are all systems of competing private insurers, with the government making sure everybody has insurance. No insurer can discriminate, so everybody's covered. Everybody gets the same range of treatments. And then I would look at the most liberal aspects of various systems, because social insurance systems, such as they are always quite liberal in some ways, quite regulated and state controlled in other ways. I'd combine the most liberal aspects. So specifically in the Swiss system, you have a lot of freedom of choice on the insurance side. You have lots of different competing private insurers and choice between quite different healthcare plans, health insurance plans. So you can choose, for example, whether you want to accept a higher level of out-of-pocket payments. And if you do that, your premium goes down. You can make that choice to have a slightly less comprehensive coverage where you have to pay some of the care out-of-pocket. And you can also choose how much freedom of choice between providers you want to have. So the default option would be a healthcare plan which gives you unrestricted access to all providers. If you want to, you can go for a healthcare plan with more restricted options, where you have a gatekeeper model like here in Britain, where you're registered with one GP and can only go to specialists if you get a referral from them. If you pick that option, then your premium would go down again. So if you have a GP that you're happy with, and if you don't value unlimited freedom of choice particularly highly, then that can be a sensible decision. In the Dutch system, you have a hospital sector that's completely independent of the government. So there are no government-run hospitals and there is no government hospital planning. Anyone can set up a hospital and they would have to contract with health insurers, but it's not the government's job to plan hospital capacity, to say we want to close down a hospital here, open another one there. That will be completely left to the market. In the Dutch system, you also get a system of selective contracting, meaning that individual insurers can contract with some healthcare providers, but not others, meaning that if you're with insurer A, you go to GPs, specialists, hospitals that are contracting with that insurer A, and they can specifically select the best performing ones, which means if we had a system like that here, a hospital like Mid-Staffordshire would have lost contracts long before it got as bad as it was. It would have been forced to, well, either seriously sort itself out, or it would have been taken over by some competing provider because it just wouldn't have found willing insurers to contract with it. In that sense, the Dutch system is a very liberal market-based system. The German system has a very high proportion of private and for-profit providers, so it's very relaxed about that aspect. In the German system, about 60% of all hospitals are private, and that is about half of them for-profit, the other half non-profit. Non-profit would mean they're run by a church, a religious organization, or a charity. If you allow the profit motive, that means it becomes easier to attract new capital and for new providers to enter that market, therefore becomes more like a competitive market.
Fascinating. So if we did have your liberal hybrid system, Christian, and we still called it the NHS, would you be willing to say that the NHS is the envy of the world?
Absolutely.
Good to know. Thank you so much for joining me.
For more blogs, podcasts, films, and reports, visit our website at iea.org.uk.